Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has warned his forces are prepared to expand military operations against Kurdish fighters in Syria, perhaps going all the way to the Iraqi border after capturing the northwest town of Afrin Sunday. The Turkish leader said, with Afrin, we have placed the comma, now comes the period, by executing what he called a cleansing operation against terrorists, a reference to Kurdish forces. In Geneva, UN Syria envoy Stefani Mistura expressed his concern over the partition of Syria.
A soft, long-term partition of Syria, which the one we are witnessing at the moment in different areas of control, will be a catastrophe, not only for Syria, but for the whole region.
The expanded Turkish operation could bring its forces into close proximity with U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters and American advisors. The capture of Afrin has created another humanitarian crisis, with tens of thousands fleeing the onslaught. A U.S. defense spokesman said the operation has forced Kurds fighting Islamic State in the east to redeploy in the west to fight the Turks. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, on a visit to Egypt, his first in 2 years Monday, pledged improved bilateral ties following disagreements over land use and the flow of the vital Nile River. He praised his Egyptian counterpart, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, for his honesty and vision for a strong and exceptional relationship. Both men agreed to bolster trade, military, and energy cooperation. Canada Monday announced it will send 6 helicopters and 250 soldiers to join a UN peacekeeping mission in Mali this year in the fight against jihadist groups. The deployment expected to last a year, with more than 160 peacekeepers killed so far last year. This is VOA News. Newly re-elected President Vladimir Putin turned his attention to foreign policy Monday, a day after his lopsided victory, insisting he had no interest in an arms race with the West. In fact, Mr. Putin said he plans to cut defense spending. He won nearly 77% of the vote Sunday in an environment that Michael Georg Link of the Observer Mission of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe called restrictive.
After intense efforts to promote turnout, citizens voted in significant numbers, yet restrictions on the fundamental freedoms of assembly, association and expression, as well as on candidate registration, have limited the space for political engagement and resulted in a lack of genuine competition.
He said the Putin landslide took place in an overly controlled legal and political environment marked by continued pressure on critical voices. Investigators in the southwest state of Texas are trying to find out who's behind 4 mysterious bombings, the latest of which occurred late Sunday, the city Austin, wounding 2. Michael Bouchard is a former assistant director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
The first 3 devices were apparently left at specific locations. Whether those individuals were targeted, it's unknown right now. But this package appeared to be put alongside the roadside, something random, so that you didn't know who the victims might be.
The 4th package included a tripwire that was caused to detonate. The bombings have left 2 dead and 4 wounded. Inspectors from the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons were in Britain Monday examining the poison used to attack former Russian double agent Sergei Skripal, an attack London believes Moscow had a role in. The nerve agent used has been identified as Novichok, produced in Russia. Theresa May is the British Prime Minister.
They have the capability. This nerve agent was one from a group of Novichoks that were developed by the Soviets. Russia has the capability and, I believe, the motive and intent. And this is part of a pattern of behavior we see from Russia across Europe.
A Russian spokesman called for evidence to back up the claim of Moscow's involvement or an apology. Britain and the European Union have agreed to a transition period for London's divorce from the EU, known as Brexit. Britain will remain a non-voting member for 21 months. Britain expected to officially leave the Union next March. Chinese President Xi Jinping delivered a fiery speech to the National People's Congress Tuesday, warning against attempts to split the country and vowing to prepare to fight what he called the bloody battle to attain China's rightful place in the world. President Donald Trump has signed an executive order banning any U.S.-backed financial transactions that involves Venezuela's new petro-cryptocurrency. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro announced the cryptocurrency in February to try to skirt U.S. financial sanctions. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The opposition candidate in Sierra Leone's March 27th presidential runoff election gets a major endorsement.
Sierra Leone has suffered a lot. The people are not in the center of national development. We need a new direction, which is what the SFPP and Brigadier Diop stand for.
Alhaji Musa Tarawale is the former presidential candidate of the Citizens Democratic Party of Sierra Leone. Zimbabwe's opposition MDCT may be on the verge of splitting ahead of presidential elections due sometime this year. UNDP chief hopes Zimbabwe's election will be credible, and voices are getting louder for Liberian President George Weah to declare his ascent as president.
Under the law, after assuming the office of president, he has a period, and we are still within the statutory period for him to make his declaration. Once he's complete with that process, within the statutory period, he will declare his asset again.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister. President Pierre Nkurunziza gets a new title as Burundi reintroduces the clan system. And President Macron's drive to promote the French language proves divisive. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The opposition candidate in Sierra Leone's March 27th presidential runoff election, retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio, got a major endorsement on Monday from Alhaji Musa Tarawale, the former presidential candidate of the opposition Citizens Democratic Party. Tarawale said Sierra Leone needs a new direction, and Brigadier Mada Bio of the Sierra Leone People's Party embodies that change. Mada Bio will face former Foreign Minister Samora Wilson Kamara of the ruling All People's Congress APC party in a runoff vote. The ruling APC is downplaying the endorsement. It is likely, saying that it is unlikely to have any significant impact on the runoff vote. Alhaji Musa Tarawale spoke with viewers Peter Clotty about his endorsement of Brigadier Mada Bio.
I have considered both candidates and the current position in which we find our beloved nation, Sierra Leone. I held consultations across the country and came to the conclusion that the best candidate is in the presence of retired Brigadier General Mada Bio. Sierra Leone has suffered a lot. The country is extremely poor. The people are not in the center of national development. We need a new direction, which is what the SFPP and Brigadier Bio stands for.
What impact do you think your endorsement will have on the presidential election runoff, particularly when your critics are saying that you did not do well in the March 7 general election, so they don't see any particular impact your endorsement will have in the presidential election runoff?
I know the two parties very well, and I'm very strategic in thinking. The APC especially is not comfortable with me declaring for Brigadier Julius Mada Bio. The reason being is I have never betrayed Sierra Leone, and I cannot encourage anything that will militate against the development of the country. And today, I stand on a neutral platform to support Brigadier Julius Mada Bio. My declaration for him is not only going to bring votes, but strategic planning for his success.
Alhaji Tarawale, do you anticipate other opposition groups who are in your similar situation to endorse Julius Mada Bio as against the ruling APC led by former Foreign Minister Samora Kamara?
Samora is not in this equation. Samora has served successive governments, specifically, or to be specific, in the financial sector. Our economy is a disgrace. There is nothing to write home about. Opposition parties are definitely going to declare for Brigadier Julius Mada Bio, because we all stand on the same platform. And to tell you, my brother, that the APC is so jittery about my declaration for retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio, we cannot allow a leader whose days are numbered to become a tyrant, imposing his own opinion on the nation. The people have to make their own decisions, and this is why democracy is the best way forward.
Alhaji Musa Tarawale is the former presidential candidate for the opposition Citizens Democratic Party of Sierra Leone. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the Gambian capital, Banjul. Zimbabwe's opposition Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, of the late Morgan Tsvangirai, appears to be on the verge of splitting ahead of presidential election due sometime this year. Before Tsvangirai died last month, he handpicked Nelson Chamisa, one of the party's three vice presidents, to lead the MDC. Since then, there's been a battle over the leadership of the party, especially between Tokozani Kupe and Chamisa. Kupe has said she's the rightful leader of the party. Now she's asking for an extraordinary Congress of the MDC to sort out the party's leadership question. Witness Dube is personal assistant to Tokozani Kupe.
The situation is that Dr. Kupe has pronounced that the party will be going for an extraordinary Congress in the next few days. That announcement will be made. That's primarily because she has been making an argument about constitutionalism in the MDC, the need for democratic principles to be followed, and to curb this violence that exists the party, and also to make sure that the party does not internally focus at a crucial time when they're supposed to be preparing an election.
Well, witness, in reality, Ms. Kupe is trying to contest the election by herself because Chamisa has been declared the leader and the candidate for the coming election.
Chamisa was declared leader and candidate by the MDC Alliance, which is not MDCP first. And that was fought down on the MDCP structures. The party will have to go for an extraordinary Congress. If the party decides Dr. Kupe is to be the presidential candidate, so it shall be. But as of now, the party is headed to an extraordinary Congress.
So when is this extraordinary Congress? Because as you know, the elections are coming very soon.
Yeah, it's going to be in the next month or so. The actual date, Honorable Obed Kudu, is going to be announcing in the next few days. But it's going to be very soon. Look, that shouldn't be a problem that the election is very close. The people of Zimbabwe, on this road towards democracy, constitutionalism, they know what is important. They know the importance of that, settling this matter once and for all, so that we are clear that we are getting into an election with people with mandate, people whom we can trust to uphold the constitution of the country, and people whom we can trust to observe the rule of law so that we restore investor confidence in our country.
Tokozani Kupe says that she does not want to associate with something she called violent faction led by Mr. Chamisa. Well, Chamisa has the support of the youth of the MDC. When did this youth become, or when did this faction become violent? Is it recently, following the death of Morgan Tsvangirai?
If you look at it, we've had two serious incidents since the death of Tsvangirai, one of them being on the burial, actually on the burial day of President Tsvangirai, where of even a long-time deputy president to Mr. Tsvangirai, Dr. Kupe, could not even go to the actual burial site of the late president because of the violence. She spent nearly 3 hours taking refuge from youth. And this that was not enough. The virus again broke out in Bulawayo. So for that reason, the Congress has to put all those issues to rest.
Is what is going on now within the MDC a genuine disagreement? Or can it be argued that the ruling ZANU-PF is trying to influence some of you in the MDC to go against Chamisa?
That would be a very misfortunate comment. The voice actually that Dr. Kupe has put on the table and consistently is a voice of principle to say, if we are going to be an alternative government to ZANU-PF, then we must show that we are committed to constitutionalism, we are committed to democracy, we are committed to non-violence. So for anyone to then say, raising those issues, he's doing so at the behest of ZANU-PF, they really need another time to be taken seriously, not in this discourse.
Witness Dube is the personal assistant to Tokozani Kupe, one of the three vice presidents of Zimbabwe's main opposition MDC party. You're speaking with me from the country's second largest city, Bulawayo. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 20th. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. The United Nations Development Program, UNDP chief, is hopeful that this year's elections in Zimbabwe will be credible to create laid a base for the country's economic recovery. After his three-day visit to the country, the UNDP chief, Akeem Steiner, talked to Sebastian Mofu, who filed this report from Harare.
Mr. Steiner said he held talks during his three-day visit to Zimbabwe with political parties and civic organizations. He said he came to Zimbabwe to hear from stakeholders about the country's needs ahead of general elections expected between July and August this year. He sums up his observations in Zimbabwe.
I think I've been struck by the resilience of Zimbabweans, whether in government, whether in civil society or in the business sector. No one at the moment can feel very satisfied with the situation in the country. So the outlook, the sense of looking forward with expectation is palpable in the country. And I think there is enormous energy that, if aligned in a way that is constructive and allows a peaceful election to take place, will propel Zimbabwe very rapidly on an economic recovery course. And I have found a country that is immensely resilient and right now is looking to the future with guarded but nevertheless a degree of optimism.
For years now, Zimbabwe's elections have been subject of dispute, with the opposition accusing former President Robert Mugabe's government of manipulating the Electoral Commission to rig polls. President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who took over from Mugabe last November, has said this year's elections would be free, fair, transparent, and credible. Mr. Steiner said his visit to Zimbabwe was to check if that pledge can be a reality by providing technical support to the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. He said his organization was worried by cases of disputed elections in Africa. I asked Mr. Steiner how that can be addressed.
I don't think there is a simple answer to that. It has to do with the political culture of a nation, the degree to which unity is stronger than the forces that divide a nation. It has to do with wise political leadership. It has to do with good governance and resilient institutions for good governance. At the end of the day, Africa's greatest hope is that its leaders and the political process are heading in a direction where accountability to the people guarantees that governments also deliver for the people. This will raise the confidence of citizens in their governments and in turn will allow governments also to lead nations forward in developmental terms.
Now it remains to be seen if Zimbabwe's 2018 elections will not be disputed as what has been happening in the past. Earlier this month, the visiting chairperson of the African Union Commission, Moussa Faki Mahamat, said the continental body was going to provide technical and financial support to ensure Zimbabwe's elections are credible. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Voices are getting louder for Liberian President George Weah to declare his assets as president. This comes as the president recently embarked upon renovations of his properties in and outside the capital, Monrovia. Liberia's revised code of conduct calls for every public official and employee of government involved in making decisions to declare his or her income, assets, and liabilities prior to taking office and thereafter at the end of every 3 years, or the promotion from one level to another. Some Liberians want President Weah to lead by example by declaring his assets as president. Minister of Information Eugene Nnamdi says President Weah is still within the statutory period to declare his assets. But first, Minister Nnamdi refused allegations by Global Witness that the Weah administration illegally removed the head of the Liberia Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative.
What has happened is not that Mr. President has violated any law. The law creating the Liberia Extractive Industry Transparency Group gives the president the superior appointing authority. So he appoints all of the members of the board, and then in turn, the board acts to carry out the administrative function of appointing the head of the secretariat. But the board overstepped its bounds when, in appointing the head of the secretariat, they granted him a de facto tenure, you know, which is not part of what the law calls for. So these are all things that can be fixed. You know, the president utilizes his appointing authority, because no group of people who themselves are appointed by the president can now grant tenure to somebody who would be asked to appoint in an administrative process.
Minister Nabwe, the last time I spoke with you, I mentioned, I asked whether President Weah had declared his assets, and you indicated that he did so before and he was going to do so again. Now, people are raising concern in terms of when is he going to do that as president?
Under the law, after assuming the office of president, he has a period, and we are still within the statutory period for him to make his declaration. The reason he has not completed the process, and I say completed because he has already started, you know, to collate his assets and his financial records. You know, he has a lot of properties all over the world. He has to review them because things have changed since he was senator. Once he's complete with that process within the statutory period, he will again, I think this will be the sixth time, declare his asset again. So this is not an issue that should trouble anyone apart from those who will perennially see negative in every positive thing. He has always declared his asset, and these things are public record. So why is it that people are clamoring when he has done these things over and over again? And he will do it again within the statutory period.
People are raising these concerns now because they say around Monrovia, the president is involved, a lot of renovation of many of his properties, and people are wondering, okay, where is that money coming from?
The president just took office, and he has not even gotten paid. Our budget process is transparent. Our expenditure process is transparent. The president has not spent a cent of government's money on the renovation activities and the redevelopment activities he's carrying out on his properties. And some of these activities started even before he became president. So I can assure you that the president's activities are above the fray. He's doing it properly.
There's an article coming up Tuesday morning, Front Page Africa. It talks about some $500 million loan that Liberia is planning to obtain from the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund. But the subheading there is that Liberia risks isolation. I think suggesting that this loan might violate something. Can you tell us something about this loan, please?
Let me just start by saying that the quintessential priority of this government is the rehabilitation and the pavement of roads. Of particular priority is the road connecting the coastal highway, which will connect Bikiana with the rest of the country. Is a promise of president, and we will utilize what is necessary so that we can achieve this promise of Mr. President. And what has happened is that we have begun discussions, and these discussions are well advanced with people in the private sector so that we can have some funding for such a construction to happen beginning this year, because the president wants major highway to be complete before the end of his first term.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's Minister of Information. You are speaking with me from Europe. Burundi has embarked on a process to revive its clans. This comes after the ruling party recently elevated President Pierre Nkurunziza to the position of supreme guide of the country. Moses Javier Rimana has the story.
Before European colonialists came, there were more than 200 clans. Majority of the sub-clans were of Bahanza, Bajiji and Bashubi clans. Burundi ruling party Sindidi FDD Secretary General Evariste Ndayishimiye said that the clans can play a greater role in the country's reconciliation program. He says that in order to consolidate national reconciliation, it has been agreed to put a major effort into reviving clans whose mistrust has been the tension of the ethnic hatred, and that the ruling party members have been recommended to null and enforce their clans in order to uproot the ethnic cleavages inoculated into Burundian society by the colonizer. The years-long antagonistic relations between Burundi's two main ethnic groups, Hutu and the Tutsi, contributed to the killings of thousands of people that began since the early 1960s. Justin Zoisaba is a member of the Burundi Truth and Reconciliation Commission. He says the re-establishment of the clans will help the commission's mission.
The clans is making people to being together. She gathers people. We will benefit from it. The ethnic group is so big, and you cannot gather, for example, Hutus or Tutsis at once.
Last week, Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza was given the title of the Eternal Supreme Guide. The move, the government seems to relish, but the opposition member Tatian Sibomana says the government should first dialogue with Burundian politicians in order to put an end to the country's current political crisis.
I am sure that there will not be a reconciliation because that the forcing to force to amend the constitution, which is coming from the Arusha agreement, that cannot be a way to reconcile Burundians.
This citizen who prefers to use his first name, Balin, had this to say.
It means nothing for me because if we try to see where you are now in Burundian society, despite our three ethnical background, Hutu, Tutsi, and Twa, I think this was not a time or a moment to reintroduce the clans. And this, instead of consolidated reconciliation, it will divide people.
Burundi is slowly returning to some stability since the 2015 political crisis brought on when President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to seek a third term in the office. Some analysts say the move to reintroduce clans may stall the reconciliation process. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
By 2050, the Paris-based International Francophonie organization predicts that the number of French speakers will almost triple to reach 700 million, with most of them in Africa. But today, some fear French is in retreat, especially when it comes to international organizations and the business world. Today, Tuesday, French President Emmanuel Macron is expected to outline a grand plan to promote the French language. But as Lisa Bryant reports from Paris, it is already deeply divisive.
The annual Paris Book Fair. Time to check out the latest French literary arrivals and maybe get a copy signed by a celebrated author. But the stands dotting the cavernous hall also feature works from Russia, Africa, and Canada, showing just how far the language of Molière has traveled and changed. French teacher and writer Laurent Sibel says there is something special about French.
The beauty of the language, the way you can mix up words, play with words, and all the images that you can create with words in a sentence. And when you read poetry or novels, you have beautiful sentences created by writers. And there is also some music to the language.
Sibel is not alone. A recent survey found the majority of France's citizens consider French key for integration and are prepared to actively defend it.
Le ciment principal.
So is President Emmanuel Macron. Speaking in Ouagadougou last November, he called for making French the premier language in Africa and other parts of the world. Macron said he came from the new post-colonial generation, and the radiance of French does not just belong to France. At the book fair, Québécoise publisher Mylène Bouchard supports the language drive. She says French speakers like herself feel embattled in mostly English-speaking North America. Others don't agree. Ghanaian student Fatoumata Cissé says Africa needs help with a lot of problems. Promoting French isn't one of them. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The opposition candidate in Sierra Leone's March 27 presidential runoff election, retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio, got a major endorsement Monday from Alhaji Musa Tarawale, the former presidential candidate of the opposition Citizens Democratic Party. That is it for this Tuesday, March 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat and dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.